Imagine telling a Wall Street analyst that a 14-year-old video game, like one with totally dated graphics, just generated nearly $500 million in 3 weeks.
Oh, they think you're crazy.
Right. While at the same time, a highly optimized, like mathematically superior Bitcoin ETF just completely collapsed.
Yeah.
I mean, you would probably be laughed out of the room.
Yeah, absolutely laughed out of the room.
Because we like to think the tech and finance sectors operate on, logic. That faster, cheaper, and more advanced tech always wins out.
Sure, that's the traditional assumption.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you look at the landscape today, and we're in August 2026 now, the traditional rules of how we build and price and sell technology, they are just completely breaking down.
They really are. I mean, the industry is currently undergoing this massive structural realignment.
Yeah.
It's not just a few weird anomalies anymore. We are seeing a fundamental shift in what dictates success and, frankly, what dictates cost across the board.
And that is exactly what we're digging into today. So we have a stack of incredibly diverse sources from Tech and News Unite Energy Boost, and it's covering six massive stories.
Lots to get through today.
Oh, yeah. We've got tomorrow's Samsung launch, that dead Bitcoin ETF I just mentioned, the whole video game anomaly, plus some massive tectonic shifts over at Sony, Meta, and NVIDIA.
The heavy hitters.
Right. And the mission of this deep dive is to find the hidden thread that connects all these, like, seemingly chaotic updates. Because they aren't random.
No, they're all very much connected.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the absolute squeeze happening in consumer hardware right now. Because, if you've been waiting for premium tech to get cheaper over time, I have some bad news for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, the era of Moore's Law acting as this deflationary force for consumer gadgets, that's effectively paused.
It's just over.
Pretty much. And the perfect case study for this is tomorrow's global launch from Samsung on August 7th. So they're rolling out the Galaxy Z Fold 8 and the Flip 8, but the real
The
story.
really crazy part, yeah.
Right, the real story is their new Ultra tier for the Fold 8.
Yeah, I was looking at the specs for this Fold 8 Ultra in the Deca News rundown, and it's less of a phone and more of a folding workstation at this
It
point.
really is.
They've packed in an 8.1-inch inner display, which is huge, a 200-megapixel camera, an integrated S Pen, and a massive 5,500 milliamp hour battery.
I mean, it's just a stunning piece of engineering.
Oh, for sure.
Fitting a 5,500 milliamp hour battery into a foldable chassis without completely compromising the thermal dynamics, that is a huge leap.
But the price.
Yes, but what's really turning heads is that pricing structure.
It's astronomical. The Fold 8 Ultra is going to run you around $2,100.
Wow.
Right. And it's not just that top tier. Across the board, we are seeing prices up $150 to $200 from just the previous generation. Like the base Fold 8 is sitting at $1,900.
Which is an incredible floor for a base model.
It really feels like Samsung is testing the absolute ceiling of what a consumer will actually pay. Oh, and Taken News also briefly noted that Samsung teased their surprise Galaxy AR glasses coming in Q4, which means they are opening up yet another ultra-premium category.
They're essentially establishing themselves as a luxury hardware provider because, well, the underlying components simply dictate it. But to truly understand this hardware squeeze, we can't just look at smartphones.
Right.
We have to look at what's happening with Sony.
Yes, the PlayStation 6 Project Amethyst. Because this is where a pricey phone becomes a completely disrupted product life cycle.
Exactly.
I was reading through the Bloomberg reports in our sources, and they note Sony is likely delaying the PS6 to 2028, or honestly, possibly even 2029.
Which completely breaks the traditional console life cycle cadence. I mean, everyone expected 2027.
Yeah, that was the assumed timeline.
But the delay isn't a software issue. You know, it is a brutal economic reality.
And that reality is the price tag. Because analysts are predicting that if Sony were to build and ship the PS6 today, like with the required next-gen specs, it would cost consumers a staggering $960 at launch.
Nearly $1,000.
That is almost double what the PS5 cost back in 2020. And I was trying to wrap my head around how costs could double so quickly. And I have an analogy.
Let's hear it.
It's like Sony is an airline trying to book affordable commercial flights for gamers, right? But AI companies have suddenly bought up the entire aviation industry, and they're converting all the planes into private cargo jets.
That's actually really good.
There's literally no room left for consumer goods on the manufacturing line.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it. Sony's president, Hiroki Totoki, is essentially trapped. The specific choke point here is the semiconductor packaging and the memory constraints.
But I mean, I have to push back on the idea that Sony could ever pass that cost on to the gamer. We both remember 2006.
Oh, the PS3 launch?
Yes. The PS3 launched at $600, and it was a total disaster. Consumers completely revolted. So, are people really going to pay almost $1,000 for a console?
Historically, no. Anything over $600 has been retail poison in the console space. But Sony's hands are tied because of what's happening upstream at foundries like TSMC.
Because of the raw materials.
Exactly. Over the last 2 years leading into early 2026, the cost of DRAM and specifically high bandwidth memory, it spiked by 80%.
80%.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the gaming industry and the AI industry are basically fighting a zero-sum game for the exact same silicon real estate.
Because AI models require massive amounts of memory bandwidth to even function.
Precisely. It's not just about raw computing power. It's about how fast you can move data in and out of the processor. The advanced packaging techniques required to build memory for, say, AI accelerators, they are occupying the exact same factory lines that Sony needs for console memory.
And the AI industry is buying that capacity up at a scale and price point that consumer electronics companies just cannot compete with.
They can't outbid them. It's impossible.
Which brings us to the exact culprit of this whole bottleneck. Because we can trace the thread from your delayed $1,000 PlayStation directly to NVIDIA.
Yeah, NVIDIA has essentially redefined the physical footprint of supercomputing with their latest hardware.
Right, the GB300 Grace Blackwell Ultra Desktop Superchip. It's a mouthful of a name, but the concept is just wild.
It really is.
We are talking about a machine that physically sits on your desk, plugs into a standard high-voltage wall outlet, but it acts like a specialized data center. The headline spec from the sources is that it can run 1 trillion parameter AI models locally.
We really need to pause and just appreciate the mechanics of that.
It's bonkers.
Because just a couple of years ago, actively running a trillion parameter model meant querying a massive cloud cluster.
You had to be hooked up to the cloud.
Exactly. The bottleneck was always memory. You couldn't fit the weights of a model that large into a local machine without it constantly paging out to slower storage, which just destroys performance.
Right.
But the GB300 solves this by integrating 748 gigabytes of coherent memory directly alongside 20 petaflop-ps of AI compute.
And there is that highly specialized memory we were just talking about.
Yeah.
The exact same silicon that Sony can't afford to put in a PlayStation.
Exactly. NVIDIA is routing all of it into enterprise chips like this. Now, obviously, this DGX station isn't priced for consumers.
No, I think it runs, what, between 50 and 70 grand?
Yeah, $50,000 to $70,000. But for an enterprise user or a government agency, being able to process that much data locally without sending it over a network is revolutionary.
And they are already deploying them for some intense use cases. Our sources highlight that on July 22nd, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang personally launched the very first one of these systems for the U.S. military.
Right, at the Naval Postgraduate School.
Yeah, and they're using it for real-time weather prediction for naval operations and autonomous defense systems.
Which perfectly illustrates the need for local compute, right?
Right.
When you are managing an autonomous defense grid, you cannot rely on cloud latency.
Oh, definitely not.
You need the computational brain air-gapped and sitting right there in the room with you.
But on the flip side, they are also deploying these chips in massive server farms. Like, Microsoft Azure just launched a massive GB300 NVL72 cluster specifically to train OpenAI's GPT-5.
It's a huge deployment.
And here's where it gets really interesting. We have this incredible juxtaposition right now. You can have a literal supercomputer on your desk for inference and fine-tuning. But at the exact same time, frontier models require massive, like football field-sized clusters of these exact same chips just to train.
Right.
So does this local desktop supercomputer mean cloud computing is eventually going to become obsolete for researchers?
No, it actually bifurcates the market.
Okay, how so?
Well, for a researcher who is fine-tuning a model on proprietary data, the desktop GB300 is a total game changer. It gives them autonomy.
Right, they can just do it in-house.
But for training foundational models, like something on the scale of GPT-5, you were talking about exaflops of processing power. You simply can't do that on a desk.
So you still need the massive server farms.
Exactly. So we have this dual demand. You've got researchers buying up desktop superchips, and you've got cloud giants buying up tens of thousands of them for server racks.
Wow.
That dual demand is a bottomless pit, which perfectly explains why the global supply chain is buckling and basically suffocating companies like Sony.
And because that hardware is getting so unimaginably powerful and, you know, the barrier to entry is so insanely expensive, it is forcing a massive strategy shift in software. Because who has the capital to even compete in that arena?
Almost no one. And that economic reality brings us to the most significant software pivot in our sources today.
Meta, officially killing their open source AI.
This is a seismic shift for the developer community. I mean, for the last 3 years, Meta built its entire AI identity around being the open source champion.
Right, they were the good guys for indie devs.
They gave their Llama models away to developers, creating this massive, loyal ecosystem that positioned them as the anti-Google and the anti-OpenAI.
And everyone in the space was holding their breath for the next iteration, right? The Llama 4 behemoth.
But according to the internal leaks we're looking at, Llama 4 Behemoth is dead.
Wow.
Meta has entirely canceled the open source Llama line.
Which is just a complete 180-degree pivot. Mm-hmm. Instead of open source, they've introduced MuseSpark, which is a closed-weight API-only model.
Yeah.
So if you're a developer, you don't get the underlying code or the model weights anymore. You just rent access to it, exactly the way you do with ChatGPT or Claude.
The internal context that drove this decision is fascinating, though. Mark Zuckerberg reportedly saw the internal benchmark testing for GPT-5 and Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8.
And he got spooked.
Basically, when he saw those numbers, he realized a harsh truth. Open source development simply could not keep pace at the bleeding edge.
The costs are just too high.
Exactly. The sheer hardware cost buying those massive NVIDIA GB300 clusters, it's too high to invest billions into training a model, only to just give the weights away for free.
So they threw in the towel on the whole open ethos. And to pivot this hard, they actually took a massive $14.3 billion investment from Scale AI, completely restructured their internal teams, and rebuilt their entire tech stack from the ground up for MuseSpark.
And what they've built is incredibly formidable. What's fascinating here is the technical leap MuseSpark 1.1 made when it took over their API on July 6th.
The new features.
Yes. It features a visual chain of thought and advanced multi-agent orchestration.
Okay, let's break that down for a second, because visual chain of thought sounds a lot like marketing jargon. How does that actually work in practice?
So traditionally, if you feed an AI an image and ask a complex question about it, it relies on a single pass of pattern recognition.
Like it just glances at it and guesses.
Right. But visual chain of thought changes that mechanism entirely. The model literally breaks the image down into spatial topologies, maps the relationships pixel by pixel, and mathematically reasons through the physical logic of the image step by step before answering.
Oh, wow. So it's actually thinking about the space in the image.
Exactly. Combine that with multi-agent orchestration, where the AI can take a massive goal, break it into subroutines, and assign those tasks to independent AI subagents to execute.
It's acting like a manager.
Yes. And you have a true enterprise powerhouse.
Which is amazing technology.
Yeah.
But it brings up a really vital question for you listening right now. If you're an indie developer and you've spent the last 2 years relying on Llama's open weights to build your applications, Meta's pivot means your foundational layer just evaporated.
It's gone.
So if a company with Meta's infinite pockets and data centers decides they can't afford to make open source competitive at the frontier, is the dream of OpenAI just dead for independent developers?
It's a really sobering reality to face. If the entry fee to train a competitive model requires billions of dollars in specialized NVIDIA hardware, the independent developer simply cannot play in that sandbox anymore.
They're completely priced out.
They will be relegated to fine-tuning older, smaller models, while the true frontier of artificial intelligence becomes a walled garden.
Controlled by just a few players.
Tightly controlled by three or four massive corporate entities. It is the ultimate centralization of power, driven entirely by the physics and the cost of hardware.
Okay, we need to take a step back from the bleeding edge for a minute.
Yeah.
Because our last two stories provide a massive reality check.
They really do.
We've spent the last, 10 minutes talking about trillion parameter AI, visual chain of thought, and $2,100 foldable workstations. It is so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that having the most logical or mathematically sound or cutting-edge product guarantees a win in the free market.
But our sources prove that consumer behavior rarely aligns with raw specs. Let's look at the tale of two vastly different products, starting with the crypto failure.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers for the Hashdex Bitcoin ETF, ticker symbol DEFII, and its failure completely defies logic on paper.
Completely.
It's officially shutting down, with trading ending on August 17th. This marks the very first U.S. spot Bitcoin ETF to die since they were approved.
And as you mentioned, mechanically, it was a fantastic product. When the SEC approved these spot ETFs back in January 2024, Hashdex entered the market with a highly competitive 0.25% fee.
Super low.
For an investor looking to get exposure to Bitcoin, it was one of the absolute cheapest vehicles available.
But despite that incredibly low expense ratio, they only managed to attract $14.7 million in total assets.
Which is essentially a rounding error in the ETF world.
Basically nothing.
That's roughly just 225 Bitcoin.
Exactly. And because their fee was so low and their asset pool was so small, they only generated $6,453 in fees in the last quarter.
Which doesn't even come close to covering the basic operational, legal, and compliance costs of maintaining a regulated ETF.
Not even close. Now, to be fair to the market, this is happening against the backdrop of a massive crypto slide.
It's true.
Bitcoin has dropped from its peak of $126,000 back in October 2025 down to $62,600 now in August 2026.
Quite a drop.
The overall appetite for crypto has definitely cooled as institutional money sort of chased the AI boom instead.
That macro environment certainly played a role, but the real story is how Hashdex was crushed by the distribution giants.
Yeah.
Look at BlackRock's ETF, IBTF. They're sitting on $47 billion in assets under management.
So BlackRock survived and thrived in the exact same market conditions where Hashdex died, which proves a massive point about finance. But I want to contrast that failure of a highly logical, low-fee financial instrument with an absolute anomaly in the entertainment space.
This might be the most surprising data point in our entire stack today.
Oh, without a doubt. We are talking about the complete sales dominance of Call of Duty Black Ops 1 and 2.
And keep in mind, these games are 16 and 14 years old, respectively.
Right. And Activision released them on July 9th as simple 1080p ports for the PS4 and PS5. Like, these were not fancy next-gen remasters built on Unreal Engine 5.
No ray tracing.
No ray tracing, no updated textures. They were just the old, dated games ported directly over.
And the market response was staggering. They sold 11.2 million copies and generated $435 million in revenue in less than a month.
Nearly $500 million for a 14-year-old game.
Unbelievable.
And here's the ultimate kicker. In that exact same month, a shiny, built from the ground up, next-gen remake of the original Halo called Halo. Campaign Evolved was launched on PlayStation for the first time ever.
Right.
It had all the cutting-edge graphics and modern mechanics you could possibly want.
And it sold an abysmal 351,000 copies.
The Black Ops 2 alone outsold a brand new, highly anticipated Halo remake by more than 20 times.
This raises an important question. Why? Why did Hashdex fail with a mathematically superior financial product? And why did Black Ops succeed with graphics from 2012?
It's wild.
With Hashdex, it exposes the reality of liquidity moats. Mm. In a saturated financial market, brand pipeline and institutional distribution matter infinitely more than saving a retail investor a fraction of a percent on fees.
Right. BlackRock just has the reach.
BlackRock had a $1 billion distribution network and immense market liquidity, which tightens bid-ask spreads. Hashdex just had a good spreadsheet.
And with Call of Duty, why did millions of people ignore next-gen graphics for a 14-year-old port?
Well, nostalgia played a role, certainly, and the pricing was brilliant. Just $19.99 for PlayStation Plus members.
Hard to beat 20 bucks.
Exactly. But if you look at the actual game theory and mechanics, the underlying design of Black Ops 2 is practically flawless.
It really holds up.
The Pick 10 loadout system was a masterclass in resource allocation.
Yeah.
You know, forcing players to make these agonizing strategic choices. The hit registration logic, the map flow, the legendary zombies mode, these are objectively masterful pieces of interactive design.
Yeah.
They prove that a perfectly balanced gameplay loop simply doesn't need photorealistic lighting to be addictive and fun.
So what does this all mean? Look at the incredible irony here for you as a consumer or an investor or a developer. In a week where we are agonizing over the supply chain economics of $960 next-gen consoles and tracking trillion-parameter AI systems that require military-grade superchips just to function.
Okay.
The absolute biggest financial winner, the thing that vacuumed up nearly $500 million in pure profit, is a 14-year-old zombie shooter with dated graphics.
It is the ultimate reality check for an industry that is currently obsessed with hardware specs.
It really is. Whether you are out there actively managing a portfolio and evaluating ETFs, whether you are trying to justify dropping over $2,000 on tomorrow's Samsung foldable, or if you're building a software product yourself, this deep dive proves a fundamental truth.
Absolutely.
Raw specs, whether that's an ultra-low expense ratio, the most photorealistic graphics, or even an ideological commitment to open source code, they often lose to substance. They lose to massive brand trust, deeply established distribution networks, and experiences that just fundamentally work and feel good.
I think there's a broader, perhaps more cautionary implication here, too, if we synthesize everything we've analyzed today.
What's that?
We have 14-year-old video games vastly outperforming massive new remakes. We have the champion of open-source AI surrendering to closed corporate models because the sheer cost of hardware is too exclusionary.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, are we entering an era of technology where true grassroots innovation is taking a back seat?
That's a scary thought.
Perhaps the future of this industry doesn't belong to the visionaries who invent the newest or most cutting-edge thing, but simply to the giants who control the hardware supply chains and those who control the distribution of the things we already know and love.
That is a heavy thought to take with you, but a vital one to navigate this current chaos. The tech landscape isn't marching forward neatly, it's consolidating. Thank you for joining us as we unpack the hidden threads of this week's tech news. Keep an eye on those memory prices, watch where the hardware is flowing, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.